A new broadband network technology will soon launch in Baltimore. Will it close the digital divide? The Obama camp turns to the iPhone for a new get-out-the-vote strategy, and Google unveils a phone of its own to compete with the Apple handset. Well, here to keep us up to speed with the latest in technology news is our regular contributor, Mario Armstrong. Hi, Mario.
Hi there. How are you?
I'm quite well. Hope you are, too.
Yes, doing good.
Okay. So imagine a city. An entire city blanketed with this ultra-high-speed internet connection. That's no longer a fantasy. In Baltimore, the city is beefing up its internet connectivity next week with a new technology called WiMAX. And Mario, as I understand, people have been calling this Wi-Fi on steroids.
That's a good way of putting it.
So you tested it out. How different is this?
I have tested it out, and it is quite different. I think a lot of people are using that comparison of Wi-Fi on steroids because it is, first and foremost, it is a wireless communications. It is the ability for us to be able to connect our laptops, mobile devices, and other things to the internet wirelessly. The main difference is Wi-Fi hotspots are typically limited in the amount of coverage area, usually up to several hundred feet, around 300 feet or so. So that's why it's useful in places like airports or coffee shops. But you really can't move. You have to stay kind of fixed in that one location. WiMAX, on the other hand, one base station can really give you about 30 miles of range. So you have 300 feet from Wi-Fi compared to about 30 miles from WiMAX.
Wow.
And it claims to have faster speeds than Wi-Fi, which I can say at this point in my testing has proven to be true.
Mm-hmm. So why is Sprint launching it in Baltimore?
You know, that's kind of the weird question that we're getting in B-more town, as we call it. You know, people in the West Coast
are
like,
jealous.
Why not the Valley?
Well, you know? I know it's coming to Chicago, but, you know,
right.
Why do we have
DC
to wait?
Because you guys aren't as cool as Baltimore.
Well, we'll talk about that later. Go ahead.
No, I really think, you know, I think this is good that this is actually being launched in Baltimore for a number of reasons, because you're asking the question and a lot of other people are. But the bottom line is, when I talk to Sprint, Baltimore offers some unique urban characteristics about the city. And ultimately, it's a great test bed. It's not too large. It's not too small. Has a good concentration of people within the city. It has the penetration of people, business professionals, and others that would use this service, and it has all of the interference things that could cause problems and limitations, tall buildings, steel, just all of the trees, just all of the urban environments, things that you would expect in an urban environment.
Mm-hmm.
So if it can work here, it should work to scale in other places.
Mm-hmm. Want to switch over.
But I still say it's because we're cooler in tech than everybody else.
Of course you would. Well, Senator Obama's campaign took the battle for swing votes to the iPhone this week with a new application called Call Friends. So how does this application work?
Yeah, this is amazing that, you know, his team is like on top of this. So, yeah, Call Friends. Basically, you have an iPhone and you go to the iPhone iPhone store through mm-hmm. iTunes, download the application. And essentially, it's a tool that's kind of designed to help you get more involved, not only with the campaign, but it's directed really at all the people that are in those swing states, which is what I think is very interesting, because it helps you organize by contacts in the swing states. And that's what the whole quote-unquote Call Friends is about. So it's kind of like 6 degrees of separation that they're trying to reduce to help you call friends that you may know or maybe network to in some of these swing states. So
mm-hmm.
you can maybe give a little bit more influence or a little bit more impact to the political process.
Well, the Obama campaign, of course, has gotten a lot of attention for its use of technology. And I was wondering if you expect the McCain campaign to roll out anything similar.
You know, I don't know. It would be nice to see that, quite frankly. I think both of these campaigns need to continue to show this type of outreach of utilizing technology. I mean, McCain has launched a new social network as of a few weeks ago called McCain Space, and it is a much better-looking social network than what they had before. So it's a good point that you're raising. They might see this as something that's maybe a waste of time, but, you know, they got this application created in 3 weeks, and normally iPhone developers need way longer than 3 weeks. So that's pretty impressive. So it's feasible that the McCain campaign could turn around and have an application themselves.
Uh-huh. Well, you talk about social networking, so I want to talk just a little bit about that. Facebook, of course, has around 100 million users. MySpace has even more. There's Flickr, there's Twitter, there's all of these things. National Public Radio has gotten into the Web 2.0 world with its launch of an online community. So we're right there with you. New York Times has one as well. So how are all of these social networks, how do they enrich a reader or a listener's experience?
Yeah, well, if they at the core, if they do what they're supposed to do, they're supposed to give voice to the fans, to the members, or to the listeners, or to the people that belong to a membership or an organization or a company. I mean, you have to, it's turning over the control, if you will, of allowing conversations of people that have like-minded interests to be able to make new connections and share their opinions and viewpoints. And at the core, if it does that, then it has the success of having a non-biased, non-agenda type of social platform that really can grow. And I believe, you know, not just being on NPR, not trying to sound overly biased here, that there is a community of loyal listeners mm-hmm. to NPR programming. Mm-hmm. And this could be a platform that allows them to be able to voice their opinions and maybe not always agree with things that happen on NPR, but I think that's always builds a better NPR as well. So I think it's a smart move.
Hmm. Okay, well, I guess we're doing well.
I just joined it today. I just signed up, and the sign-up process was easy. I just uploaded my little profile. So people that are listening, you know, hit me up at NPR's social network now. Okay. I'm on there as Digital Dude Mario.
Okay. Well, I want to jump back to the mobile phone news because internet search giant Google has jumped into the phone game. They've unveiled their new smartphone called the G1, and that's supposed to be available in stores later this month. Are we just seeing a big leap here in cell phone capability?
Yeah, it's not the it's funny they came out with the G1. It's like, is that a plane or what exactly will this phone will it fly?
It means that a G2 will be coming your way.
Right. So, yeah, this is an interesting play on Google. They launched with about 34 other member organizations. They created this thing called the Open Handset Alliance. And what that did was started this whole thing of creating a mobile software, and they're calling it Android. So by creating software, they then said, you know, we need mobile devices that could run this software. And that's how we get to T-Mobile and HTC developing this phone called the G1. So it comes out later this month, and it's really being pitched against the iPhone, and it's going to really be interesting to see how this battle between the iPhone, who has done very, very well for itself, versus this newcomer of the G1 on T-Mobile, how they go head to head in the next few weeks.
You think they're going to be able to edge them out?
I think they will. I don't know about edging them out, but I certainly know that the market needs more competition and it needs more ideas. And if Google's behind it and they keep it open source, that would be really good for, I mean, it is open source. That would be really good for application providers and developers to create more things. But, you know, iPhone has already been out for a little while, so they have a jump start. But we need competition because not everybody can get an iPhone because they don't want to be on AT&T.
Yeah.
So I think this is definitely a good option and something that people will definitely get in line for.
Well, Mario, we could go on for days and days. There is so much.
You mean
much...
we're almost done?
We're almost done. There is so much new stuff out there that I just can't, you know.
Another hour for news and notes. We need another hour for news and notes. I'm going to start an MP. There we go. I'll go to the social network and I'll start a community, a new group, another hour for news and notes.
Thank you, Mario. Mario Armstrong is News and Notes regular technology contributor, and he joined us from the studios of the Baltimore Sun. That's News and Notes. Nicole Childers and Christabel Nsiabwadi produce the show. Sasha Woodruff edits and Devin Robbins directs. Our technical director is Shireen Strausberg. Marcia Caldwell is our drive engineer. Our staff includes Farai Chidea, Tony Cox, Roy Hurst, Jeffrey Bennett, Jeffrey Gardner, Zachary Slobig, Joanne Griffith, Drew Tewksbury, and Sonata Lee Narcisse. To listen to the show or subscribe to our podcast, visit our website, nprnewsandnotes.org. And to join the conversation or sign up for our newsletter, visit our blog at nprnewsandviews.org.